You hear that? Your dog knows spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
New CBS Monday.
NCIS, here's where we can see them.
NCIS and NCIS Hawaii return with all new cases.
Double tap to the chest, one to the head.
These guys are professionals.
All new criminals.
Violent island that got here.
Welcome to paradise.
And all new crimes to be solved.
If you're watching this, I've been arrested.
What are the charges?
Just one. Murder.
New NCIS and NCIS Hawaii. Monday starting at 9, 8 central on CBS and streaming on Paramount Plus.
Welcome to Tigers in 20, a Go Tigers 247 audio podcast, your one-stop shop for all things University of Memphis Tigers athletics. Here are your hosts, the founder of Go Tigers 247, Brooks Hansen, and lead writer for Go Tigers 247, Christian Fowler.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of Tigers in 20. I am your host, Christian Fowler, and joining me is Go Tigers 247 digital content creator Kenny Stubblefield, and we are back. Told you guys we would be back. This is second consecutive week now. I wasn't lying. We're officially back. And we have such a fun, weird, odd, whatever other adjectives you want to use, game to break down from this past weekend. And this is so funny because this is what's cool about, you know, podcasting and having archived stuff, whether it's written or, you know, digital, whatever. Having archived stuff of the way that you talk about a game the week before, you can look back and say, I was right here, I was wrong here, or this is kind of what we expected to happen. And last week on the podcast, you and I talked explicitly about how we really didn't know anything going into this game on either side, and it was a game that could go either way. It was a game that we would learn a lot about both teams, and it unfolded in like the most odd, weird way of all time. So I had a feeling that it was going to be something that we didn't expect, and this is not the game that I expected to see. But nonetheless, Memphis comes out with a huge victory over an SEC team at home. I mean, when you look at what this team has done at home, it's up there with like the best schools in the country. 17 straight wins, 22 consecutive non-conference wins at home with three SEC wins in there, two over Ole Miss and one over Mississippi State. So what this team has done at home over the past several years is absolutely incredible. But Kenny, I know you were upset you didn't get to go to this game and be on the sidelines for it. Now I know you're even more upset that you didn't get to go.
I texted you in the middle of the game and was like, I cannot believe I'm not at this game right now. Like, I just kept picturing all the plays, all the crazy stuff that was happening. And I was like, I would have had the greatest seat ever to all of that. And yet I was having to sit next to my Arkansas-loving father-in-law, who kept trying to switch back and forth between the Arkansas and Georgia Southern game and Memphis game. And finally I was like, bro, we're at my house. Change it. Like, y'all are going to beat Georgia Southern by like 50. Like,
So for those who don't know,
super annoying.
This past weekend was Kenny's wife's birthday. And, you know, he obviously did the right thing, Kenny, by staying home and hanging out with his wife and his family. But it was a tough one for him. It was a tough pill to swallow.
I was weighing the decision of if I go to the game or if I don't. And I said, you know what? My buddy Christian will let me come live with him if I decide to go to the game. I said, I'll go live with Christian. That's fine.
Well, fortunately, Kenny stayed at home and he's not living with me. So anyway, getting back to the game, breaking down the game. Like I said, it was a really fun, weird game. Immediately stepping away from it, Kenny, what are the overall thoughts? Because there is a lot to unpack from this game, and obviously we want to get into UTSA discussion because I think that's a bigger game than most common fans realize. But lot to unpack from this game. Just kind of immediate overall thoughts from the win on Saturday.
Well, just as a 30,000-foot view, the Liberty Bowl is a tough place to play. When momentum, we always talk about momentum in games, right? And how momentum is a big deal. And it is very, very clear to me that when the momentum starts to swing the Tigers' way and the fans are realizing that and interacting with that and they are helping with that through cheering and through all the different things, the dynamics that's happening inside the game, inside the stadium, the Liberty Bowl is a hell of a place to play. And it's not an easy win for anybody. And so that was my first thing that I you think about it. Just think about the number, 17 straight wins at the Liberty Bowl. That's a staggering number of wins in a row against some really good teams. I mean, they haven't played just a bunch of cupcakes at the Liberty Bowl. So that was my first thing. Second thing is seeing players, unlikely players, and players that we thought going into the game were going to make a difference, they stood up and made a difference. Like one of the people that you've talked about, that needed to take a step forward in this game is Quindell Johnson, the safety for the University of Memphis. And he did. He played an amazing game. Seth Hennigan threw his first interception, but in that very play, stopped a pick six. And then, like for me, as I was watching that game from home, that was the turning point of the game. That was where the momentum just completely shifted, because it could have been over if the Mississippi State player had scored the touchdown. But Seth threw a pick, stopped them, and then they stopped them on the 2-yard line on fourth down and then took it 98 yards for a score. And that was the game for me. Like, that was the game. Obviously, Mississippi State kept playing and the game was still going, but in terms of momentum, that was a huge momentum swing. And so it was really awesome to see the Tiger players that we expected to step up, and then some players that we didn't expect to step up make a step forward, like Joe Doyle, right? Like, that was an incredible – he's not a kicker. He's a punter. And he comes in and bangs a 51-yard field goal in the fourth quarter. I mean, that it's those kinds of things that happen that, man, just make you go, there's something about this team that's special, and there's something about this team that they just don't give up. They keep fighting, and they play hard every single play.
Yeah, and I think that comes down from the head coach and the coaching staff, and that's something that we saw last year, right? There was many games last year when Memphis got down early and had to battle back. Namely the SMU game, and that came up short. They came up short in that comeback bid barely. SMU kicked up
after four weeks off of COVID.
Right, and that was losing on a last second field goal. The UCF game, obviously incredible comeback, and it's just something that through the first few games, and really it was a common theme throughout the season, is like this team doesn't give up. And we're seeing that again, you know, this year. Obviously this was our first real chance to see that. Even though they got in some danger late against Arkansas State, they pretty much had control of that game the whole time. But this game, you go down 17-7, you throw an interception, they're, you know, in plus territory. You can roll over and give up there because you're playing against an SEC team. At least you're at home, but you're still playing against an SEC team that you know has a good defense, that you know has some good skill position players, and you can give up at that point, and they didn't. Like you said, they go out and they make the stop. Quindell Johnson bats down the ball on just a really good play that shows you how smart of a football player he is. I think a lot of the plays that he made on Saturday shows just how smart he is and just how good of a defensive back he is. And then for a true freshman quarterback to come off of an interception and take the ball 98 yards into the end zone and get it back within a one score game and make it a game. And considering all this is in the second half, you know, we're not in the first half anymore at this point. This is second half when it's really like, okay, this could go south. So just a lot of resolve from this team, a lot of really good things that you see from this team, in the ability to just breathe, relax, and go out there and make plays rather than fold or try to do too much. And that's something that you see a lot of teams do. A lot of young quarterbacks do is try to do too much. Like at that point, it wouldn't have been hard to envision Seth coming back on his own 2 yard line and making another mistake, but he didn't. He came out and he took the team 98 yards. So it was really cool to see a true freshman quarterback come of age through a pretty battle tested game. It was cool to see a defense that has been pretty rough through the first two games of this year and pretty rough over the last several years in general, step up in a big game. Even though they did allow a ton of passing yards, they allow a decent amount of points to make the plays that they did make to allow Memphis to win the game. Because without them stepping up, without Quindell Johnson making big plays, without J.J. Russell making big plays, without a defensive touchdown early in the game, without some of the pressure that was applied to Will Rogers at very specific times and few and far in between, Memphis' defense made the plays necessary for them to win the game. Seth Hennigan made the plays necessary for them to win the game. And that's what matters. You know, when you have players that have resolve and step up when they have to, you win football games.
And they took advantage of some really crazy shit that went down on that punt return. Like, let's not go too far without talking about that, because that that's a play that is like taken over college football today in the last couple of days, people freaking out about that play. And I think me and you, we texted about it a little bit, and I've come around to your side of it a little bit. I think that, let me just ask you, what are your thoughts on that play and the eventual, I guess the blow up that's happened since then from the SEC officials, conference, Mississippi State fans?
I mean, you know, I typically don't get into stuff like this because really I just don't care. Like, I'm not one of those journalists that's just like, I have to be in the drama. I have to be in the drama. Like, I really don't care. Like, that's genuine. I don't care. It happened. It's over. I mean, that's really all I have to say on it. It's one of those plays that will, without a doubt, live in Memphis Tiger infamy, right? Like, that will always be remembered regardless of what the rest of this season looks like. Memphis could lose every game from here on out, but that play will be talked about forever and ever as long as there's Memphis Tiger football, which is awesome to be a part of those moments. You and I have been very fortunate and very lucky to be a part of a lot of huge moments in this Memphis football history for this Memphis football program, and that's really cool. But as far as the blowback from it, the SEC statement, the Mississippi State fans, the Memphis fans, like, the back and forth there, like, I don't care. I don't entertain that kind of stuff because it just doesn't do anything for me. Like, that's just straight up.
Yeah. And I think my, as I've had a chance to kind of take a step back and think about it over the last couple of days, not really necessarily concerned with the response of people, and the response of the blowback from it. I'm impressed with how aware Calvin Austin was in that play. That what we are told, you were an athlete, I was an athlete, we played sports our entire lives. You are told from Pop Warner to Little League baseball to basketball, whatever age group you're playing, you play until the whistle blows. And so it was just super impressive to me that awareness of Calvin to continue the play because there wasn't a whistle blown. And so anyway, so that it was a hell of a play, and it was, I mean, I'm sure that was in that moment where I was like, man, I wish I was there right now.
Yeah.
Like, because the Liberty Bowl blew up when
I mean,
happened.
that was an extremely crazy moment. And yeah, it was super loud. Like, there's not a ton of times in a in a game where you, I guess, recognize the crowd, where you're like, okay, they got, you know, that was a different decibel level of noise, and that's what that play was. So those moments in any football game for any stadium for me are few and far in between, because you're so focused on play after play that you don't really sit back and listen to the crowd. But that's one of those plays where it's like, it's really freaking loud after that. So really cool play, really heads up play by Calvin. And you could tell he was kind of watching and waiting and waiting. And when he saw, he dipped in between two defenders to kind of like not.
And the official.
And the official.
And the
so
official.
It's like, I don't want to alert them that I'm coming, but I'm coming. Because he knew once he got the ball that it was, oh, it was a wrap because nobody was catching him. So just smart football play by him. A couple other things I want to talk about in this game, and let's package them all together and discuss these together. I want to talk a little bit about Seth Hennigan's performance, and we've touched on it a little bit. But I also want to talk about just how freaking good Brandon Thomas looks every time he touches the ball. And for that matter, too, like we said this last week, we got to give Rodriguez Clark his due. Like, he has played very well in number two roles behind Brandon Thomas. So let's talk about this running game a little bit. Obviously didn't get to run the ball as much due to game script and kind of falling behind early in the first half, but when they did run the ball, it was effective pretty much every time. There weren't many times where this really solid defense was stopping them in the backfield or stopping them for short gains, and that's super encouraging from what we saw last year to this year.
No, absolutely, and you called it last week in the podcast. You said, listen, Brandon Thomas is right up there with the national leaders in yards per game, you know, touchdowns, you know, all those different things. He's, you know, an elite running back at this point in college football. But a sign of success for you would be after the Mississippi State game to see him have somewhere right about 100 yards. Right, like the, and maybe a couple of running backs having effective games that sustain drives, and that's exactly what happened. I texted you halfway through the game and said you were 1,000% spot on. You look at the end result of the game, and you look at Brandon Thomas's stats, and you go, okay, what was it, an Arkansas State game where he dropped off 270-yard touchdown runs in the game? No, not at all. But he was extremely effective. And, I mean, Ryan Silverfield even talked about it today in the press conference. He's in his weekly press conference. He said, you know, he goes, I love Daryl Henderson. And he goes, and I love his speed. He said, and Brandon Thomas and Rodriguez Clark have that kind of speed, but they're also the kind of running backs that love to run the ball in the A-gap. And they love to bang. They love to get in there and bust heads. And you saw both of those guys do that, and statistically, was it the greatest game they've had? No, but was it the most effective? It probably was the most effective game that they've played together this year for the Tigers.
Yeah, because it was just so important to have some sort of ground game and to keep the defense honest. And when you just look at the raw numbers, I guess, of Memphis's offense and what they did, running the ball and I mean, honestly, for that matter, even passing the ball in this game, it's not very effective. But that's why games are so important, and they involve context, and you have to have context to really understand a game. So, like, if you look at the box score for this game, Memphis had 25 carries for 87 yards, averaging 3.5 yards a carry. But you got to keep in mind, college football, they count sacks against yardage and all that. So when you look at strictly what Brandon Thomas did, 16 carries for 83 yards, averaging a little bit over 5 yards per carry. That's huge against this defense, first of all, that absolutely shut down NC State 2 weeks ago. And then Rodriguez Clark had the one carry for 16 yards where he absolutely blasted Jalen Green, like sent him back like 3 yards.
Such an amazing hit.
Yeah, so when you look at just those two guys, 17 carries for 99 yards is pretty much exactly what they needed to do to keep the defense honest and show them, look, you can't underestimate our run game. Like, we can run the ball against you. You can't just pin your ears back and blitz us every time and expect us not to be able to have success in the running game. It's exactly what they had to do to keep the defense honest, and they did that. And I think if, you know, the game script doesn't go negative and they don't go down by 10, Brandon Thomas could have potentially had like 115 to 130 yard game, but They just didn't have the luxury of being able to run the ball late in this game because they were in catch-up mode.
Well, he didn't play. I mean, the offense didn't see the field until the 5 minutes left in the first quarter. So,
right.
I mean, he basically did that.
Oh, gosh. I do not know how Mississippi State fans watch that offense. It is the most boring dink and dunk 5 yard. And I'm not like trying to be like a hater. Like I'm not like trying to stir anything up or anything like that. That is just not what I like to watch in a football game. No. Like I would literally rather watch a team line up in I formation with a fullback and run the ball 35 times a game more than watch screens and swing passes and hitches and slants. It's just freaking like hitting your head into a wall over and over and over again. And I cannot watch that. It was so boring.
Yeah, it was.
Be like, oh my God, 17 plays, 75-yard drive, field goal.
It's not supposed to take 17 plays to get to score a touchdown in college football.
No, and also we're spoiled by watching Memphis every week that it's like any play can go 75, 80 yards. But it's just, man, that is not the style of football that I like to watch at any level for any team. It was very boring in it. But it is, when you, like, okay, let's give it its respect. It did what it was designed to do. Like you said, Memphis doesn't get on the field until pretty late in that first quarter and aren't able to get on the field very much because Mississippi State was able to have those sustained drives of, you know, 10-plus plays, and it kept Memphis's offense off the field, which is exactly what it was designed to do. So, it worked. It was effective. I mean, Will Rogers had 420 yards and 3 touchdowns.
He threw the ball 67 times, dude.
Right. But I mean, it worked. I mean, when did Memphis' defense really stop them? Is what I'm saying. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It did what it was designed to do. It's just not my style of foot. It's not what I like to watch.
No, definitely not.
But moving along, let's dive into Seth Hennigan a little bit because I want to talk about this performance. We finally get to see him play against an actual legit defense because you know the first two were not. Regardless of what anybody says, those defenses were not good. And he was able to shred them as he should have, but he plays a solid Mississippi State defense, and he looks so-so. 16 of 28, 159, 2 touchdowns. Really, first half was bad. First half was really bad.
No, absolutely. Yeah, it was. I mean, the first half was bad for the entire Tigers offense. It's hard to necessarily pin all of that on Seth Hennigan, but. Yeah, I mean, there was definitely some growing pains. I mean, you could tell that he was facing – he's a true freshman quarterback facing a high-level defense. But that's why they play the entire game, right? Like, he ended up coming in. I mean, whatever happened throughout the entirety of the game for Seth, I look at that 98-yard touchdown drive in the second half, and I say – there you go. Like, that's the story for me of the game for Seth Hennigan. Yeah, it was a rough – it wasn't statistically the most dynamic game that he's had. He threw an interception, saved a touchdown on that interception.
Had another interception called back also.
Right. So, I mean, definitely wasn't his – you know, definitely wasn't a game that you could say he dominated like he did against Nicholls and against Arkansas State. But that 98-yard touchdown drive is the story of the game for me and shows me the kind of quarterback that you talked about last week that he is, that he's a coach's son who doesn't get rattled, who is always in the game and knows who to get the ball to. I mean, on that 98-yard touchdown drive, on a 4th and 9, completed a pass to Javon Ivory. To get a first down. I mean, those kinds of plays, that takes big stones to do that. And so that drive for me was more impressive than all the negative that happened throughout the rest of the game.
Yeah, I agree. And there was a response there, right? Because, like I said, the first half was rough, like just plain and simple. And I think Seth Hennigan will tell you that himself. Like, he made some really bad throws. He made some bad reads. He missed some throws. Like, it wasn't pretty. And I could almost guarantee you that nerves played a big role in that. Like, yes, he had played at the Liberty Bowl before against Nicholls State, but this was his first real game in the Liberty Bowl, and it's against an SEC. Like, everything that could be stacked up against a player was stacked up against Seth in this game. Like, there was a lot of things that weren't going his favor. So, I mean, I'm not sitting here saying that I think any less of Seth as a quarterback because he had struggles throughout the game. Like you said, it actually heightens my view of him because he did bounce back. He showed that he is pretty unshakable and that he will come back and do what he can do. And I mentioned the second interception he had getting called back. And I wonder if he knew that it was, the call is 12 men on the field. I think they actually had 13 on the field. I wonder if he knew that it was a penalty, that he knew they had too many men on the field and was trying to take a shot, or what exactly, because I don't know exactly what happened there. So you can't really judge that. It didn't count in the flow of the game anyway, so whatever. But I'd be interested to know if that was like, I knew there was a flag, so I was throwing it up. But I know the receiver fell down anyway. So just a weird circumstance of plays. I'm not even trying to really get into that. I just think that's, interesting. And I think he probably knew there was too many men on the field, took a shot, which, even more so shows that he's aware and a smart football player. And then comes back after that penalty and throws the touchdown to Calvin Austin in the back left corner of the end zone, who absolutely roasted the defensive back on that play. So overall, it was a solid performance from Seth Hennigan, and now he gets a chance to prove it against another good defense. Like I said earlier, UTSA is not a team that's going to draw a bunch of ratings or draw a big crowd at the Liberty Bowl, but they're a good football team. Like, they beat Illinois. They beat Illinois in Illinois, I'm pretty sure. 3-0 on the season. Think their defense is allowing 16 points per game. So Seth Hennigan's going to have a chance to come back against a good defense, but there won't be as much juice around this game, right? There won't be as much hype around this game, which should give him a chance to kind of sit back and not have as many nerves and be able to have a better game, even though this is statistically a better defense than Mississippi State was coming in. I think he'll have a better performance against UTSA this week.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. So I wanted to ask you this before we move on to UTSA. One of the things that you mentioned in terms of the Mississippi State game was that the biggest matchup that you saw was the Memphis's offensive line versus Mississippi State's defensive front seven. How do you grade it? What were your thoughts on the offensive line and how they protected Seth and opened up holes for the running backs? And did they do what you thought that they might do in this game?
I mean, I think they did better than I thought they would do. I mean, they allowed a couple of sacks. Mississippi State's defense was able to get home a couple times and make some plays. But as far as like opening holes in the running game, Memphis was able to run up the middle on the outside on some off the tackle runs, which against those SEC teams that have a ton of speed and a ton of depth, it's difficult to get outside the tackles, but they were able to do that a couple of times. So overall impressive. There were some miscommunications a couple times on the offensive line that led to some sacks and some big plays by Mississippi State's defensive line. But overall, like, I think this offensive line last year against Mississippi State would have had a lot worse of a performance. So I think it really, to me, it showed that, yes, this offensive line is much better. That's one of the best defensive lines they'll face all year. They don't have Cincinnati in the regular season. UCF's got a couple of good defensive linemen that they'll have to go up against later in this year. But, pound for pound, this is probably the best defense these 2 weeks back-to-back, Mississippi State and UTSA, that they'll have to face all year. So the offensive line's being put to the test relatively early, and so far they're really answering that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So let's wrap up the Mississippi State game. Any other thoughts that you have about it? Any takeaways?
Yeah, I think we've said pretty much everything that we need to say on that Mississippi State game. So before we dive into UTSA, let's take a quick break and hear from our sponsors. And then on the other side, we will get back, talk about that game and what to watch for Memphis this week against UTSA.
Allstate wants to remind fans that mayhem is everywhere. Like when your fantasy league meets up at your house, everything's great until the hot plate gets too hot for the tablecloth. Now your kitchen's up in smoke. And if you don't have the right home insurance coverage, the cost to fix this is anything but a fantasy. So switch to Allstate, save money, and get protected from mayhem like this. Not available in every state. Based on coverage selected, subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Savings vary.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean in a woman named Sylvie.
She's a can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, you can't hold me down. Yeah, how you like me now? You want beef, then have a call. Huh, like bling blow, ay.
Welcome back, everyone. And as I mentioned before the break, we're going to do a quick little breakdown of this Memphis and UTSA game. And I think I already may have said this twice in this podcast, so excuse me for the repetition here. But this UTSA team is solid. I know just as well as you do, this is not a game that's going to incite any new fans or anything like that. It's not going to get any brownie points. But this is a good team. Like, I'm not even going to lie a little bit. Like, when I saw this game on the schedule, I was like, okay, that's a 50-point win or whatever. And then as the season rolls around, I start looking at it. And then we're 3 weeks in, and I'm like, okay, maybe UTSA is decent. And then as the game rolls around, I'm like, oh, my gosh, Memphis is only a 3-point favorite in this game, 60-40 in the ESPN Football Power Index on who has the percent chance to win. Memphis with the 60% chance to win this game. And it's like, okay, maybe UTSA is a little better than we thought they were. I think they were last year too, but I don't pay attention to UTSA. Like, I'm sorry. I don't watch every single college football team in the country. And you catch me on the NFL, you know, I know every team a little bit better, but UTSA
quite a few more teams in the NCAA Division I football than there is in the NFL.
Right, and I don't think UTSA has a very, you know, has a very fat TV contract, and I don't think they have many games on TV, so sue me. But I know they played Louisiana Lafayette in a bowl game last year, lost by a touchdown. That Louisiana Lafayette team is solid. I think they finished number 19 last year, were ranked coming in this year before the loss to Texas. And so, overall, all that to say, UTSA is a good team. Through three games, they're allowing 14 points a game. They've beaten Illinois, Lamar. Sorry, guys, I know that one doesn't do much for you. And Middle Tennessee State. So, it's like, okay, even this year, like, they haven't played much talent. Like, Illinois is a Power 5 team. They beat them in Illinois, so that's a good win for them. They shut out Lamar. You've never watched Lamar football, and neither have I, so there's that. And then Middle Tennessee State, and Middle Tennessee State's not known for their football program. So it's like maybe UTSA is kind of in that state where Memphis was last week of, like, what's, you know, what really is this team? Because I know Illinois, yes, they're a Power 5 team, but they're not very good at all. So I think they beat Nebraska in the first game, and then they've been trashed since then. So, guys, I'm not sitting here spending like 10 hours previewing this game or like breaking down UTSA film. So Illinois beat Nebraska, lost to UTSA, and then they got stomped by Virginia, and then they lost to Maryland. So I don't know what to tell you. College football is crazy. Football is crazy in general. There's a reason they play the game. Memphis could come out and win this game by 30 points. UTSA could come out and win this game by 30 points, or it could be a close game. Like, those are pretty much your options in every game, right? So I'm not spreading any new knowledge here. But what I will tell you, you like that monologue there, Kenny?
Yeah, that was good, man. That was that was definitely a little aggressive, but
hey, we're just being honest, right? Like,
absolutely.
I'm not gonna sit here and like give you the whole spiel on UTSA because neither one of us care, and the fans don't care for me to like do a whole bunch of research on UTSA, like. That's not what we're going to do here. But, you know, we can look at these at these numbers and what the teams have done, and I can give you a pretty accurate synopsis for what I believe will be the keys to the game this weekend.
Well, I'm just grateful that the level of apathy you have towards UTSA and studying film is not translated over to Ryan Silverfield and the coaching staff at the University of Memphis, because they are definitely, I mean, Coach Silverfield mentioned it in his press conference today. Hey, man, we are not taking these guys lightly. They have a fantastic defense. We are in it now. Like, we're in game prep now. So the apathy you feel, the apathy the fan base might feel towards this game, the Tiger staff and players do not feel. I can guarantee you that.
Yeah, and they shouldn't. So for very good reason, they're not overlooking them, and they're doing their due diligence, which is what they get paid to do. And I don't get paid to watch film at UTSA. So you know, if they paid me that much, I would watch
there
film
you
at
go.
UTSA.
There you go.
Yeah, but I think what this game comes down to, and man, it just feels like this is a game where Ryan Silverfield's gonna want to run the ball. Like, that's just my early like prediction for it. I have nothing behind that right now. I just feel like with a smaller school coming into the Liberty Bowl that has a really good defense that's allowing 14 points a game and 80 rushing yards per game, Ryan Silverfield and Kevin Johns are going to want to line up and go stop 5'11", 200, and 5'10", 220 in Brandon Thomas and Rodriguez Clark. Like, that's just what I feel like is going to happen. Not that they won't throw the ball, like you're going to get Calvin Austin involved in this game, but I could definitely see this being like, let's run the ball 30 times in this game and show these dudes that we're different. So, could be totally wrong. Memphis could come out and throw the ball 40 times in this game, but I just don't see that happening. I see them prioritizing the run game and prioritizing breaking UTSA's will. That's just what I see happening in this game. And I think if they do run the ball effectively and they can pile up 150 plus yards on the ground, then this is a game that they should win.
Could this potentially be kind of a shift from the Mississippi State Memphis game, where that's exactly what Mississippi State came in to try to do? They came in to try to break Memphis's will and show them, we're SEC, we're Power Five, we're the big boys here. We're going to come in and we're going to dominate the drives. We're going to dink and dunk you to death. You know, we're going to run the ball. We're going to, even though Will Rogers threw 67 times, that's the difference is that more than likely Tiger coaches are saying that UTSA is not Memphis in terms of their will to win, their drive to win, their ability to make adjustments and in the second half, and hoping that UTSA will just break and give up and say, you guys are better than us.
Yeah, and I don't think Mississippi State tried to come in and break anybody's will, because I think breaking a team's will comes with really playing an aggressive style of football and throwing 5-yard passes 70 times a game is not really aggressive to me. Like, that's just not what I see as a, like a break your will type thing. Like, break your will is like, I'm going to line up and run. And when it's 3rd and 7, we're still going to run the ball because we think we can block you 5 yards down the field. Like,
yeah, that makes sense.
And we've seen Memphis, they did that in games last year where it'd be like, we are confident in running the ball on 3rd and 7 because we think we're better than you. And it didn't work out as much last year because the offensive line wasn't as good. But this year, I could see that being an effective strategy in a game like this. It's just like, we're going to show you that we can run the football regardless. And that's not to say that this UTSA defense isn't good, because they are a very solid defensive team. But they don't have the size and the depth that Mississippi State's defense did last week. Once again, right. None of this is to say that UTSA doesn't come out and completely put the clamps on Memphis. Because it is possible. I don't think it will happen, but it is a possibility. I think Memphis lines up, runs the ball, moves the ball, and is able to score points, because I just don't see many defenses being able to stop this offense, especially if they're clicking at a 70% rate, you know, like just on a that's not even like a scale. Like, I just came up with a percent. I just said a percentage, honestly. Like, there's not a scale that's like, hey, your offense is firing on this percent. Like, that's not a statistic. I just made that up. But if that was a statistic, if Memphis was hitting that 70% of their plays or whatever I'm trying to say here, then I don't think there's anybody can stop them, and they definitely weren't hitting at that high of a rate last week and still scored 29 points. So I don't see them being stopped. UTSA does have some solid receivers, some solid run. Like, they're a good team is what I'm trying to say here, guys. Freak. Like, they're a good team. And Memphis is a good team. So, but I do think that Memphis comes away with this game. I think they're able to run the ball. I think they're able to be effective overall offensively. And I think your defense makes a couple of big plays when necessary. I don't think they're going to shut down UTSA. I don't know how much we'll see Memphis' defense shutting down anybody this year until Mike McIntyre is willing to get creative. I don't understand it. It's something we didn't talk about in the Mississippi State game, but maybe we'll wait until after this week to talk about it because it was frustrating to me. And I don't know how long I want to go on talking about a three-man rush right now, Kenny.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to that. There's a lot. I know you texted me halfway through the game and we were just like, what in the heck is going on here? And I think a lot of Memphis fans would agree with you that that's a frustrating development. I mean, you watch the game against Mississippi State and you say every time they rush four, every time that they put more than three in the on the line or stunted or blitzed Thomas Pickens into the backfield, they made a play. They pressured or they made a play. They got a sack. They got whatever. They stopped them. So it'll be interesting to see kind of the progression that comes from seeing the game film from Mississippi State moving towards UTSA and saying, okay, are they going to try some different things before the start of conference play? Because this is the final game before conference play starts. I mean, they play Temple. They go to Temple the next week. So, this is, to me, this feels like, not to dismiss what UTSA is going to do, I think that it is something that where you look at their defense and you say, okay, well, they're ranked very high nationally. They give up 14 points a game. So we're going to get a test here, right? Like, we're going to be tested. So let's try some things. Let's go out in there and do some things. And I think you're probably right, in terms of what to expect in the running back room this week, that to get a heavy dose of Rodriguez Clark and a heavy dose of Brandon Thomas, it'll be interesting to see what happens. And I think it'll be interesting to see how the defense plays. They put up a lot of points, UTSA does. So it'll be interesting to see how if Mike McIntyre tries something different to get them ready for conference play. See what he does. See if he rushes more, stunts more, blitzes more. See who's playing in the secondary. Obviously Greg Rubin had a great game. He's having a fantastic year as a freshman. I mean, he gets picked on a lot as a true freshman. People think as a true freshman, he's, let's go to him. But he's more often than not made good plays. Quindell Johnson obviously had a great game against Mississippi State. We'll see who else is going to step up. I think that's a huge question that needs to be answered moving forward into the season. But this UTSA game is a tough one to break down because, like you said, we don't watch footage of UTSA. We just look at the numbers and say, wow, they seem to be a good team. The Tigers should come in and impose their will on them this week and make it 18 wins in a row at the Liberty Bowl.
Yep. So last thing, we got some questions. So I'm going to say something real quick and then we're going to do a rapid fire Q&A and we're going to knock that out. So things are starting to get a little interesting now when you look at the schedule, especially if Memphis is able to make it past UTSA this week. When you look at what's coming up next, as you mentioned, they have the Temple game, the first conference game of the year against Temple in 2 weeks on the road, 11 o'clock kickoff. Temple is not a good football team. That is a game that Memphis should win. Then you have an 0-3 Tulsa team that's had some kind of hard-fought games, but they also lost to UC Davis in the beginning of the season. So it's like, how good can that team be? I don't think they're very good. So I think that's a game that Memphis wins. Navy's 0-2 this year. Really not very good either. They always give Memphis problems. It's always a tight game, but Navy's offense has been bad this year, and so is their defense. Usually their defense is at least decent, and they haven't been so far. So that game's not looking like Navy's not looking like a huge contest like they typically are, and that game's at the Liberty Bowl. Then you got UCF, which is the big game of the year, but Dylan Gabriel got injured, right? So that's adds even more question marks to what that game could look like. SMU with Tanner Mordecai has been really good offensively. Another winnable game. East Carolina, winnable game. Houston, winnable game. Tulane, winnable game. Like, I hate to say it, guys, but they could do, like, they might be favored in every game from here on out, outside of maybe the UCF game. Just looking at it, I think they might be favored in every game other than that UCF game and possibly the Houston game. Maybe it just depends on where the two. That's a late November game. That's the second to last game of the year. So it just depends.
A lot of things could change.
Right. But just long term projecting, like Memphis getting through that Mississippi State game, and if they can make it through this UTSA game, then they should be seven and oh going into UCF. So we'll see. Obviously still very early in the season, but things are looking up for Memphis. I know, especially when when we see a true freshman quarterback starting, it's like, okay, maybe this season could get ugly. And, you know, maybe this season could look really, really good by the time that Memphis gets to UCF. But as I said, Kenny, I know we've got some questions, so let's go rapid fire on those and wrap this up.
Well, I think a lot of folks want to know, one of the big transfers that came in from Michigan State was Julian Barnett, a secondary cornerback for Michigan, played wide receiver a little bit for Michigan State, came to Memphis, and hasn't seen the field very much this year. So a lot of folks want to know, man, like what's going on, especially looks like Jacoby Francis is having a little bit of a down year. He's having a rough year. So what are your thoughts, man? Is Jacoby going to see the field? Where is he at? What's going on?
Yeah, plain and simple, guys. I don't know. This is something that's been really quiet on this front. It could be a doghouse situation. I don't know. Like, there are not a lot of times when you can't get to the information and when you can't get certain things, but it's been radio silence on Julian Barnett. I think he played one play on Saturday against Mississippi State, and I didn't see him, like, get injured or anything. So, I mean, if it's an injury, you know we're not going to hear about it. Like, it's going to be kept quiet. And if he's in the doghouse, that's another thing that's going to be kept quiet on. So, honestly, like, usually I have these kind of answers, and I give those to you guys in VIP, but this is one that I'm not 100% on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, practice hasn't been open to media for a while, and it's just we don't have the answer to that question, unfortunately. So I can guarantee you, though, Silverfield will play the players that will help the Tigers win games. So, that's really that's really about it. In terms of the wide receivers room, obviously Gabe Rogers was kind of a late addition to the wide receivers ranks. I mean, he was a kick returner last year, started off the depth chart this year as a running back, and now he's in the wide receivers room. Do you think that the Gabe Rogers experiment has worked out? Do you think that there's going to be any other some of the more heralded wide receivers come in and do something this year?
I think really only a couple plays has Gabe Rogers looked really good, and kind of what I thought with them starting him is they were going to have ways to get the ball in his hands, whether it was on screens or jet sweeps or touch passes or just some way to get the ball in his hands in space, because we've seen what he can do in space, and Kevin Johns just hasn't done that. I mean, his one big play of the year came in that Nickel State game on that diving catch, and outside of that, it's been really quiet for him. So, if he's going to be a starter, I would like to see him utilized. I would like to see them use his skill set, but they haven't so far. So, I don't know. I've kind of been myself wondering where Eddie Lewis is, because I've heard, you know, I'd heard rave reviews about him during fall camp and from the summer when he got on campus, and we haven't really seen him yet. So, and I know Rock Taylor, Cameron Wright, some of these younger guys that everyone's really excited about, you know, you got to work those guys in. Yeah. You've got to be careful with those guys. You can't let them come in and completely ruin their confidence. But even a guy like Kai Matthew, I thought we would see more this year. They just haven't honestly rotated receivers very much at all. Maybe that's something that they're waiting on. Who knows what, you know, who knows what's going on, because, you know, we keep saying every week that, you know, we think we'll see the defense open up. Well, maybe it's the same thing for these receivers. Maybe they're waiting for conference play or something. I have no idea, but I would like to see some of these younger receivers get into the game. Maybe, and I'm not even necessarily referencing directly Rock Taylor and Cameron Wright here, maybe even just like Kai Matthew get into the game or Eddie Lewis get into the game. I think we just got to see what someone else can do in that slot position for Gabe Rogers, because he just hasn't been super productive as of right now through the season.
So I'm going to ask you a question that you said you didn't want to talk about really, but I'm going to ask you anyway, because I'd love to hear you rant for a second. Do you think, one of the questions that was asked was about the defense and some of the three-man rush zones that are run in the secondary. Do you think that, are you expecting to see Mike McIntyre make some adjustments throughout the rest of the season? Or do you think that this is it? Like, this is the defense that we're going to see. We should expect a kind of a bend but don't break type style moving forward.
Bend but don't break is fine, right? Like, if you know you're not a super talented defense, bend but don't break is fine. But not even attempting to get pressure on a quarterback just seems so contradictory to any defensive coordinator I've ever met or watched call a football game. Especially when you when your three-man rushes were actually getting we haven't seen Jaleel Clemens a ton this year. He looked really, really freaking good when they were bringing those three-man rushes. He was in the backfield most every play. He didn't have a sack or anything like that early in the game, but he was back there every play. And as a DC, when you see that, you got to say, okay, if we're having success with three, we send four or five, then we're getting back there. And it just didn't happen. I would hope this isn't it from Mike McIntyre this year, because I think this defense still, like, I've been on this bandwagon, and I guess I'm not going to jump off until the freaking wheels fall off, because I'm here, right? Like, I've already been on the hype train for too long. And I think, and it's really cool to see some of our board members on the game threads and stuff say, like, this is not a talent issue with the players. This is a coaching staff issue. And I agree with that. Like, it's not the players. It's the play calling right now. Like, that's brutally honest. But, I mean, it's what I'm here to do, is, like, tell what I honestly see. And I think they have the talent to be a good defense and to be a defense that forces turnovers and gets sacks and has big plays, but they just haven't been given the opportunity yet. So hopefully, and Mike McIntyre is a really good defensive coordinator. He's had a lot of success throughout his career. A lot of guys on this defensive staff are really, really good coaches, and I think they'll see that, they'll understand that, and say, look, we have the guys to have a good defense. Let's go make it happen. So I'm fingers crossed, just like the fan base is, that will happen, because I've been hyping this defense up since, you know, before spring practice started.
So let's take the Christian Fowler reporter hat off and put on the Christian Fowler defensive coordinator hat on. What would you do? Like, what's two things that you would do to shore up what we're seeing in the Memphis defense? What are two things that you would do right now to change what we're seeing?
Bring pressure and play Julian Barnett. Plain and simple. Like, I don't even need to expound on that. Like, that's two things that should have been done already.
Yeah, I mean, it's stunning, because, like, and I know you're not going to get a whole lot of stuff from the spring game, but, man, Julian Barnett was impressive in that spring game. I was on the sideline seeing him. Obviously, he had that pick six run back, and man, the kid is a beast. And so, I'm not the football mind that you are, but I would love to see more Julian Barnett out there. Clearly, there's something going on in that situation that we don't know about, and that's not our right to know, honestly. Let the team figure that out. But I'd love to see some Julian Barnett out there.
All right, we got any more, Kenny?
We have a lot of questions. Some of them are questions that I don't think that we really need to dive into. There was an update. People are asking about injuries to Morris Joseph. They're asking about injuries to David Kemp. You know, kind of when are we going to start seeing some of these guys come back? And I would say, we don't know a whole lot about injuries because that's just not how the program rolls. They don't reveal a whole lot, and there you just don't ask a lot of those kinds of questions if you want to, you know, continue to, you know, to be in the good graces of the Memphis staff. But Ryan Silverfield did actually talk a little bit about Morris Joseph and David Kemp today in his weekly press conference, and so I wanted to go to that audio real quick and just share. So that people are asking us that question, hear it from Ryan Silverfield more so than what we can speculate on. So this is what he had to say.
The kickers, I wish I was a better medical expert on kickers, right? They're sometimes their injuries are a little bit different, and he is coming along nicely, but I assume we'll see him out here before too long. I don't ever want to put a guy out there that doesn't feel 100% comfortable because we know we have a long season. And we want him fresh and healthy, and never want to put a guy out there where he'd be at risk to further injure himself.
So, Kenny, you know, we heard from Ryan there kind of the status on Morris and David, and kind of with that being said, I think, you know, another 50-plus minute football podcast, good Lord, I never saw this coming 2 weeks in a row. I never saw this coming once, much less twice back-to-back. But, yeah, let's end on that. I think that's a great way to kind of put a bow on it and wrap it up. Heading into this week's game against UTSA. So head over to the site, gotigers247.com. Check out all the football coverage we got going on there. We've been putting out a ton of content lately. That's why I love when the season rolls around, because we're able to actually get consistent stuff out. Bryant Dacus, our intern, has been doing an incredible job. We've given him a little bit more freedom this year. And he's done a really, really good job stepping up and writing some gamers and covering games. So I know we're proud of him. So stay tuned to all of his stuff when it comes to pre- and post-game coverage and actual game coverage. And basketball season is inching closer and closer, and you know we always got you covered on that. So with that being said, Kenny, you got anything else?
I'm good.
All right. Well, that's a wrap.
Thank you for listening to Tigers in 20. If you enjoyed this episode, we would love for you to leave a comment and a rating wherever you downloaded your podcast. If you are interested in daily content all about the University of Memphis Athletic Program, please hop over to www.gotigers247.com. Articles are published daily, and you can join the Go Tigers 247 family by signing up for a VIP membership for even more behind-the-scenes information. We'll see you back here next week.
If you want to win your fantasy football league, it starts right now. The offseason is the best time to get ahead of the competition. We'll help you win your league on the Fantasy Football Today podcast, part of CBS Sports Podcast Network. Fantasy Football Today has 3 episodes every week following the latest news, giving you early rankings, early sleepers, breakouts, and busts. So if you're a dedicated fantasy football manager, check out the most dedicated podcast, Fantasy Football Today. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found.
Baseball has begun, which means you need to listen to Fantasy Baseball Today in 5, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Sample, every Monday through Saturday as we deliver all of your fantasy baseball needs in just 5 minutes. We'll break down the biggest performers, news, and prospects who could make an impact this season. Make sure to download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and everywhere else podcasts are found.